I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Screen Therapy. Sometimes bad paths lead to good places. Amanda Pants of the Ontario alt-punk band The Meringues found herself homeless with an alcohol dependency in her early teens. Like a lot of youth with severe life challenges, Amanda found the punk scene, and even though it allowed her access to more trouble, it also taught her where she drew the line. It was a good friend, Ted, that encouraged her to go back to school. Things were looking up for Amanda, but unresolved and undiagnosed mental health issues haunted her. Before long, her depression led to extensive therapy and a bed in an eating disorder clinic. When she found out her favorite band was playing a show one weekend, she begged her doctors to let her go. They did, she called Ted, the show was amazing, and they decided to start a band together. And that's how the Meringues came to be.
My name is Amanda Pants. I am the co-lead singer of the band The Meringues from Kingston, Ontario, Canada. I have been playing music since my teen years. Discovered music in a place that we lovingly call the chemical dump here in Kingston, which is just a little Browns field with chain link fence around it. You're not supposed to go there, right in the middle of downtown. So we would go there and have bonfires, and I was sort of exposed to music at that time in my life and really got introduced to punk rock. My first show was an Against Me show at a Legion, and I really didn't know what to expect. A friend had sort of showed me a song of theirs, and I went down, and there were all these people moshing in this giant circle pit. It was really crazy. It blew my mind, and I just never looked back from the punk scene since then. Growing up, I was a very insecure young individual. Grew up with a single mother and a brother, and my mother really suffered from depression, and that really affected me as a young person. I didn't really understand what depression was, and I remember even seeing a media article about how if you're taking antidepressants, that can affect you for the rest of your life and you might never be happy again. And my mom had told me she was taking antidepressants, and I remember arguing with her about how bad this was going to be for her, and really just didn't understand what my mother was going through at that time and how that was affecting her. I became very distant from her and moved out of my home when I was 15 and led into a life of homelessness and just struggling on my own and trying to figure myself out. That really led into some depressive episodes and getting into an alcohol dependency at a very young age. I was finding myself down at the liquor store in the morning before it opened up, and it was not a good place to be as a young person, really.
You mentioned seeing Against Me, and what a great show to see as your first concert. They're just amazing, and they've been a great band for decades now. Do you remember thinking at that point in time when you were getting involved with that subculture and some pretty challenging circumstances around being homeless, but finding the punk scene as well. Did you see a connection between those two, that you're maybe looking for something or that it found you? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I really saw all of these people who were going through things in their own life, the energy, the anger, the passion. I don't know. I sometimes kind of look back and joke about how naive I felt as a young kid. Every show I went to, it didn't matter if it was a big band like Against Me or a local little small town person. I thought they were all superstars. I just finding this place where these people were like up on stage screaming, doing their thing, being themselves. It was just a really wild time for me and a connection that I wasn't finding anywhere else in my life.
Were you looking at this stage longingly and saying, one day I'll be up there? Because, you know, you got into playing bands later, but do you remember sort of pining over that possibility?
Oh, absolutely. Going back to my mom, she was in bands as well. Just from a really young age, I always really wanted to be in music. I wanted to be a country music singer when I was really little. And then just seeing this other part of it was definitely like a holy cow, like there is this thing happening here. At the same time, I'm a reserved person, people would say. There's a yin and yang to it. If you really know me, I'll peel back the layers and people are like, oh, you're not that shy person. I thought you were. But there was this piece of me that was very much like, oh, wow, I wish I could do that. That would be so cool. But a part of me that was like, I could never. Like, I thought at that time that it would definitely be an impossible thing to put myself out there in that way.
You talked about your struggles when you were younger with mental health and substance use. And do you think that the punk scene helped with that? Did it hinder it in some ways? Was it a place to receive inspiration, or was it a place that kind of made you spiral more?
I definitely think that there was both, to be honest. There's a spiral there that happened for sure. I definitely explored a lot of different things I think were more available because I was in this scene and had access to certain things. And that's not to say the punk scene in and of itself is bad. You're going to find these things in every scene, I think.
Yeah.
Any kind of place that you are, you're going to find yourself exposed to these things in different ways. But yeah, definitely my very first band that I was in was a band called The Dirty Lickens. And unfortunately, the guitar player that was in that band, he passed away from an overdose. And then my next band also had a member pass away from an overdose. And there was just a lot of exposure to things going on that was very frightening for me. At the same time, I was delving into things. I'm drinking, I'm doing different drugs. But a piece of that scene that also kept me away from other things, there are certain types of hard drugs that I won't touch and have never touched. And it's because I've seen friends go down that avenue and people that I love go there and not be able to come back from that. So yeah, it led me to try things and expose myself to things and went down bad paths. And at the same time, that exposure kept me from going down other different bad paths.
Yeah, the reason I ask too is because I feel like the question isn't necessarily what bad things came out of being part of the punk scene. It's more like what worse things could have happened if you hadn't found the punk scene and found that outlet. You mentioned being homeless more in your teens, and that didn't last because you're here now with us and you're not unhoused as far as I can see.
Yeah, no.
Where did the turnaround come?
Actually, meeting Ted, who is the co-lead singer and guitar player in my band, The Meringues. Our bands played this show together and our social circles kind of collided at that time. And I had never really hung out with them. And they were different in that sense of, you know, they drank, they partied, they did the kind of thing that everyone was doing, but it wasn't in that excessive sort of way. And as we got more into our friendship and I got more introduced into their social circle, that really exposed my alcohol dependency and exploring that. And I was making these new friends and thinking, oh, these people aren't really going to like me, was sort of my thought. I didn't think I was a very likable person when I was in that state. And really just having a support of that new social circle and entering that just didn't have that focus on that thing really helped. And then Ted and I started to become really good friends. And I would talk to him about some of my passions, which was to work with youth at some point in my life who were maybe experiencing homelessness or having struggles, and he really encouraged me to go to school. So within fostering that friendship, I was able to quit drinking, which looking back sometimes I think is a miracle. I was able to sort of put it in a back pocket and not look back on it. And it had to be very cold turkey. There was no middle ground. And I left that behind and started school. And that got me figuring out what I needed to do with my life. When I went in, I was very hyper-focused on working with homeless youth. That was really my passion and where I thought I was going to come out at the end of it. But during that process, I got introduced to working with really young children in the school setting, realizing that mental health and things that you're exposed to in life and childhood trauma and things like that are kind of what is the catalyst to our mental health later in life. Got me more interested in working with younger age groups. So that is what I do now. I work with an after-school program called Sistema here in Kingston that works with underserved communities, and they provide free music education to children after school. Yeah, so it's been a really fun experience.
And are you right involved with the music stuff? Are you doing music with the kids?
They're learning more complex music than I know. They're learning violin and cello and how to read sheet music and all this stuff. So I'm always kind of like trying to learn alongside with them. But I would say that when they start to get up there, they're better musicians than me in there. I look back and think like, oh, how did I slip through the cracks as somebody who now works in a school field? I was maybe a little missed there along the way. I don't know exactly what happened. Maybe it was just, don't want to age myself, but the decade I grew up in. In my school program, we learned a lot about child development and mental health. The professors there were continuously echoing this sort of idea of you don't need to have a clean mental health slate in order to do this job or be successful in this field or to work with youth. But if you're kind of not checking yourself out, then you're probably not going to be successful in this field. You're never going to ask a child to do something that you're not going to do yourself. So if you're sitting there saying like you're with a child, you're exploring their depression, their life, their trauma, and you're not investigating those things on your own, or you haven't done that at some point in your life. That message was just continuously drilled into me while going through school. And I thought I had a band at that time that was falling apart. I had some friendships that were falling apart. I wasn't feeling too healthy. When things are falling apart in my life, I find something I can focus on and I can really control. So I was doing really well in school. And I thought, these things are falling apart. I can ignore all that. I can forget about that. I can just focus. If I do really great in school, that's what's going on. And I don't have to think about any of the bad things. So at the same time, they're echoing this message. And I think, okay, I do need to check in with myself. I need to check in with a doctor. And a really emotional day just led me to calling my doctor and saying, hey, you know, I'm feeling bad. School's going great, but I don't feel healthy. At that time, I didn't think I had any sort of major mental health issues. I just thought, I'm a normal person. I'm in school. School's stressful. College is stressful. I'm poor. I can't eat because I'm poor. So going in, my doctor's like, no, you need to talk to some people, set you up with some meetings. As I'm giving them a history, they're saying things to me and they're saying, you're very underweight. You're more underweight than maybe somebody who's just poor. There's more going on in your life. And I realized there was a lot more going on than I thought. Speaking to psychiatrists and stuff, they really had to convince me in some ways that I was sick. As I started to peel back the layers, I went in and did some long psychiatrist tests and working through things and going through your mental health and your life and your history. And they laid on me, you have anorexia. And even then I thought, no, you guys are silly. If I think about this, maybe I have disordered eating. I'm Googling, what are these things? You're doctors, but you're wrong. And
Dr. Google.
Yeah. And so I'm agreeing with some of the things they're saying, and I really didn't believe them. And it took about a year and a half of going to a therapist and peeling back those layers of, well, what is that? And what does that mean? And there's a lot of stigma attached to those things. And I think I was more afraid of that label of, well, you know, if I really start to admit to these things that are happening in my life and peel back these layers even more, what does that make me? I was really afraid of just how people would think and feel about me if I admitted, even with all of the evidence being given to me by a year and a half of doctor visits, that there was something here I actually had to take a pause with and deal with in my life.
Not really realizing what was going on and not really realizing that this is a severe mental health issue. I went through the same thing with bipolar. I really had no idea what it was and never suspected. I knew I was weird and always wondered why I was doing stuff that didn't seem to really match with my being, I guess, or like my morals and getting out of control, but not knowing why. And you can go from like what I call lowercase depression into uppercase depression. I'm feeling really awful and feeling really sad versus like, oh, this is something that actually it's a condition. It's serious.
Here in Ontario, I'm not sure what it's like where everybody else is, but we really don't have a lot of services for people who are struggling specifically with eating disorders. And so when I started getting exposed to that and doctors were saying, no, you need to go to these more specific services. There was only 12 beds in Ontario. And the doctors were saying to me, you need to be one of the people in these 12 beds. And it took that kind of understanding of this is just how sick you are. Like, this isn't something you're going to deal with through a couple therapy sessions or Googling things or signing up for things online. I'm in Kingston, they're in Ottawa and Toronto, which are 2 to 3 hours away, going to these places that have Ontario's top doctors dealing with this, standing in front of me saying, you need to be here. That's really what it took for me to finally say, yeah, okay.
What was it like for you during those times with music?
I've always kind of used music as a comfort, and taking those 2 hour visits, they kind of start as weekend visits at the hospital. I would listen to music excessively on the bus rides because the buses make the trip 4 to 6 hours longer if you've ever had to take one of those long Greyhound bus rides. So yeah, I spent a lot of time listening to music and really exploring bands, discovering females in music. I had not really taken a lot of time in my life to look into females in music. Girls in music have been quite stigmatized. A lot of my friends growing up didn't really have a good attitude towards it. Like, I remember making fun of like girls in music. Oh, they just crawl around on the stage or use their sex appeal. And so I kind of thought it was punk rock and cool to ignore those things. I don't know what the catalyst was to kind of get out of that. But I was also discovering music that maybe wasn't quite punk. It wasn't in that genre, but in many ways was. And I'd recently discovered Alabama Shakes. And to me, Brittany Howard, the lead singer of Alabama Shakes, was just the punkest woman I'd ever seen. I think I'd first seen them on a TV show where I'd seen them visually and their band was playing. And this woman just comes out and she was this just powerhouse of vocals. And I was like, wow. Mama, why you working so hard? I'd rather do you good than do you working so hard. When I was first going into the hospital, I was just so obsessed and in love with this band, Alabama Shakes. The program I was in, unfortunately, was a very lockdown program. Can't go in with any personal items. You can't leave. You are there from the start to finish. I had found out that Alabama Shakes was coming to Ottawa, and I basically begged my doctors, can I go? Like, please, I know it's not a thing where you let us out at nighttime, but please let me go to this thing. And they kind of said, okay, if you can do A, B, and C in throughout this week, we will let you go to this show. And a band called July Talk, who's a band from Canada here in Toronto, they were opening up that show, and I'd never really investigated them. So I started investigating them and was, well, these guys are kind of cool. You know, this is going to be a really great night if I get to go. And I messaged Ted and said, "Will you drive down to Ottawa and come to this Alabama Shake Show with me and my doctors? Let me go," because I didn't know anyone in Ottawa at the time. And he was like, "Absolutely." So got the okay, and we went out and to that show that night, and it was absolutely amazing. I think I bawled for the first half of the set of Alabama Shakes. But when July Talk opened the show, they blew my mind. They have the two lead singers. They have a male and a female, and they were just wild. And I don't know if they were just super amped up that night, but they came out with just so much energy. And Lea Fey was jumping around all over the place, and there was lipstick smeared all over her, and she was jumping all over Peter, and Peter was punching himself in the face. And there were moments even I was like scared watching this band. I was like, oh my God, like what is happening? This is like, I'm frightened. And but it was just so energetic, and I loved every second of it. And when we left the show that night, I turned to Ted and I said, we need to start a band. There's something about that first band that I love. Let's start a band with a male and female lead singer. And he was like, all right. That was the catalyst to starting the Meringues.
Do you think the doctors understood why you needed to go out, how important it was to you?
I think they must have, because they let me go. I think it was a little bit of a unique experience for them as well. I don't think they usually let people go. There was also a curfew. I think I didn't get to see the encore that night, which was a little disappointing, but it was still worth it. But yeah, I think they understand, did understand how important art was in any degree, really, to therapy and healing.
So how is your mental health these days? The band's been doing, you know, a lot of stuff. So I'm hoping that creatively you're happy, but also in your personal life, how are you doing?
Definitely more stable than I was at that time in my life. I don't think this rings true for everybody, but for me personally, I think it's something that I'll always have to keep a watch on, probably for the rest of my life. Different aspects of it, the depression, the alcoholism. I know for a fact that I couldn't even dabble because I would go 1,000% back into it. As well as the eating stuff, it's something I always have to be aware of. I still don't necessarily have the happiest relationship with food. It's way better. I take care of myself much better. I eat my meals, but I resent food, in all honesty. I often joke that I wish it was like breathing. I wish I could just go and all of my needs would be taken care of. I find it stressful. It takes time out of my day. And I don't know if that's a relatable thing for some people. Maybe I know it's something it needs to be done, like showering and taking care of yourself and all those other things. So I do it and I accept it, but it's still a love-hate relationship.
Earlier in life, you said stressful events were very hard to cope with, and a lot of times you weren't able to cope with them. So when things happen to you now, what's the approach?
The Meringues has definitely been my biggest outlet. I've almost created a bit of an alter ego on stage. My stage persona is very out there, very loud, very, I don't give a, I don't know if you swear on your podcast, so I won't. I do a lot of things up on stage that I just wish I was maybe sometimes doing in my regular life. Flipping the bird whenever I want to. My go-to move is pretend I'm ejaculating on everything. I'm sorry, that's not very polite, but maybe I don't always have to be polite kind of thing. I care a lot. I care about my music. That's why I'm up there. I'm making music. But I don't care. And that's like how I get up there. I make music. It's just this one time for an hour, 45 minutes that I am going to just not care about what happens for the next little while. And so be it. Hopefully people like it. If they don't, it's just, I guess, not for them. It's just a very different persona and how I present myself in my day-to-day life. And I think that just having that outlet really helps. Yeah, I sort of love when people come up and say, I wish I could do that. I'm like, you can! You can do it! And all this time I thought the pain was
That was my conversation with Amanda Pants of The Meringues, themeringues.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting, it's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.